Hey gang, I've been a little under the weather this week, feeling a little under the weather today, so apologize if I don't sound that great, and not been a super productive week, but I thought I'd debut a segment I've been thinking of adding to the main show called Extra Extra, where I'll read you an old-timey newspaper article and then discuss it a little bit. Let me know what you think of it, if it's a good thing to add or not. And I'll see you on the other side of the break. I'm Alan Brill, and this is a brilliant tidbit. A tasty snack, a little thought nugget from the mind of Brill. Something to hold you over between main shows. But warning, it still gets dark in here. The Nashville Union and American, March 14, 1869, Tennessee, ran the following headline. A frog weighing 93 pounds captured in a cave 4 miles south of Columbia. Great excitement. From the Columbia Herald. We received the following letter late yesterday evening at the hands of Mr. Lem Matthews, who vouches for every word in the letter, and from his well-known integrity and that of his brother, we feel not the least hesitancy in saying that is just as they represent. Near Indian Camp Spring, Wednesday, March 10th, 1869, Mr. Horsley, having a large cave within a short distance of my house, and it having excited the curiosity of my two little boys, aged respectively 11 and 13 years, they ventured this morning to explore its hidden wonders. With torches in hand, they proceeded to the distance of about 100 yards from the entrance, when they were terribly startled by the appearance of a monster frog, as large as a hogshead, they said, when they came running up to me at my house. Having seen so much in imagination when young and possessing a considerable degree of curiosity, I was determined to see for myself what it was. I went to the residence of Mr. W. D. Matthews to get assistance in exploring, and found several neighbors, J. W. B. Thomas, Richard McCandless, G. O. Dixon, John Dew, and Sol Porter there, who were eager to go right away, as their curiosity seemed as great or greater than mine. In a short time we fixed up 3 torches, procured some candles and a lantern. We proceeded on our voyage of discovery. Having arrived at the mouth of the cave, the torches were soon lighted, but some hesitancy seemed to be shown by all as to who should go first. Mr. Thomas led the van into the damp cavern, whose gloominess produced a chilling melancholy, and one of the party was extremely anxious that they should retrace their steps. But the indomitable Thomas and the daring Matthews and Porter prevented, by telling the party that, "We can whip out all the frogs in creation." We wended our way slowly to the place my son saw the frog, and, sir, I do say to you, without exaggeration, that the frog was not near as large as when my children saw it, but is undoubtedly the largest specimen I have ever seen or heard of before in this or any other state. We advanced to within about 20 feet and halted. It was then sitting with its side to us, and when all the torches were brought up, it turned slowly around facing us, and such a hideous sight I have never held before. Its eyes, as they glistened in the torchlight, made such an impression upon me, and in fact upon the whole party, that we trembled as if in the presence of a real demon, for in all my imaginations of the appearance of a demon, I must acknowledge that I never conceived of anything that would be calculated to fill the mind with such horror as this. We stood in the position we had first taken for some time. Mr. Matthews threw a small stone towards the frog. It rolled and struck him lightly. It bowed or ducked its head twice towards the ground in succession and made a leap towards us. And if I tell you he leaped 10 feet, I do not believe I'd miss it by 6 inches. As soon as it struck the ground, an instant retreat was simultaneously agreed upon without consultation. The torches were thrown to the ground, and in an instant Egyptian darkness reigned, and a struggle was made to gain the entrance. The noise and excitement was intense amongst the little boys who attended us, and above the din of confusion, the voice of Dick McCandless could be heard. "Is a frog bite poisonous?" Mr. Porter, having some matches, the candles were soon lighted, and with the light came back the courage of the little boys. An advance of a few steps brought us in sight of the monster again. A plan for its capture was soon determined upon. Mr. Matthews sent to his house for a large goods box, which soon after arrived. The box was dragged in and the top removed. The box was pushed by Messrs. Dixon and Dew towards the frog. Mr. Matthews, using the top as a shield, succeeded in getting behind the frog, and by throwing stones at it for some little time, made it change its position to a place near the wall. The box was then pushed slowly up and covered. The top was slipped down, the box was turned over and secured by a few nails, and the prize was ours. Right glad did we all feel at our success, and with high hearts we commenced the work of dragging the box out of the cave, which we accomplished after much labor, and we lifted it to a cart and started for the residence of Dr. W.D. Matthews to have it weighed. Mr. W.D. Matthews, I correct myself there. To have it weighed, as I had no balances that would draw enough at my house. A rope was tied around the box, and the frog and box were weighed together. The frog was then turned out into a chicken coop, and the box weighed and showed that the frog weighed exactly 93 pounds. I'd be willing to make an affidavit of this a fact before any justice of the peace in Maury County. Those present saw the weighing can attest to this. It is, I dare say, as rare a curiosity as ever found in our county before. Mr. Matthews measured it while he was in a sitting posture, and the height was exactly 3 feet 4 inches. Its eyes, as near as we could guess, were 2 1/2 inches in diameter. The color of the breast or belly was a dark yellow, while its back was a dark green, and apparently mossy. Around its neck are 2 distinct red and 1 dark stripe. From the center of the head, or rather, commencing from the top center of the nose, there are apparently 1,000 small light stripes springing out from a common center, like rays of light. Its feet are of large proportions, and are perfectly black. I lay claim to it, as my boys are first to discover it, which claim was not objected to by any of the party who went with me. If nothing happens to it, I'll bring it to Columbia next week and give your town people an opportunity of seeing something worth seeing. I will probably come to town on Tuesday, and it'll remain at Mr. W.D. Matthews until that time. I would like very much for you to see this frog before it is moved. Byline, APN Matthews. Well, okay then. This was an actual article printed in an actual newspaper. It might be a good time to point out that back in those days, newspapers weren't always all that factual. The whole idea was to sell the paper and run the most sensational stories that could do that. And they didn't do a lot of fact-checking when they got something in. And a lot of times the newspaper people would just, you know, make stuff up. Whatever, it'd sell the paper. But let's just look at it at face value for a moment, shall we? 93-pound frog. A frog of such large proportions, they described it as demonic looking. A frog so big, it caused fear in a group of grown men. So, this fear, this dread, could it have been artificially induced, something made by the frog, like a defense mechanism? We've, you know, seen it before in other supernatural beings and even in other cryptids. So I guess we should look first, was the frog some kind of a supernatural specimen that could cause fear telepathetically? Psychically? I'm not so much on the supernatural. It seemed to act on the physical plane at all time and jump when you threw rocks at it, and you could maneuver it into a box, and, you know, really didn't do anything but sit there. So just look at it as a physical creature, and I don't think that it used anything artificial or produced anything to produce the fear result. I think it's just seeing something that abnormally large that really couldn't be was what would have induced the fear in these guys. Just, you know, a shock to the system seeing it first. So, could a frog get that big? You have gigantism, we have mutism that makes things larger than they would naturally get. So, I went and looked, and the biggest frog currently living, or that would have been living back in the 1860s, is the African Goliath frog. And the world record size is had a snout to vent length of 14 and a half inches and an overall length of 34 and a half inches with its legs extended. On October 30th, 1989, it weighed 8 pounds, 1 ounce. And the average length for this species is about 11.8 inches. And it's about the average size of a rabbit, which is an enormous, mind-boggling frog, but that still falls way short of 93 pounds. That's just ridiculous, even taking into account, you know, giganticism or what have you. Nothing's going to grow, you know, up almost 10 times its regular size, even by a freak genetic anomaly. Now, maybe it's a dinosaur frog, leftover from those days. And the largest frog ever believed to roam the earth was the Beelzebufu Amapinga, which I'm sure I butchered, but, you know, that's what I do. Roughly translated to devil frog. Is a beach ball-sized amphibian, you know, and it grew up to 16 inches and weighed about 10 pounds. They inhabited Madagascar during the late Cretaceous Age, about 65 to 70 million years ago. So, not even dinosaur frogs weren't even close to this 93-pound monstrosity. So, probably not a holdover from the prehistoric times. If this frog existed, it would be its own thing, its own heretofore unknown species. Now, they did find it in a cave, right? And there's a large belief in subterranean-dwelling monsters. And this is pell crawler country. So, and, you know, they were, you know, largely theorized to come up from subterranean cave system, a vast one that runs underneath a large, large portion of the country and of the earth. So, could it, you know, be one of these underground cave-dwelling monstrosities that came to the surface? I don't think so. It had, you know, it wasn't blind or nothing to show that it lived in darkness. It didn't seem like a subterranean creature rising to the surface, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So I'm going to go ahead and rule that out. It doesn't work for me. So I guess my final verdict on this is indeed just a made-up, very entertaining story. And I hope it is, because otherwise this frog spends final days living in a wooden box. And clearly, you know, either they didn't have it or something happened to it, because it never made its way to the Columbia newspaper, as promised. Probably because it didn't exist, would be my guess. But hey, what a wonderful story. What a great thing to think about. 93-pound cave-dwelling frog. So I say, here's to you, 93-pound monstrous demonic cave-dwelling frog. Long may your croaks ring in the night. Now, I found this newspaper article in a wonderful book called Monsters in Print, a collection of curious creatures known mostly from newspapers, researched and compiled by Adam Benedict. It's just a big book full of old-timey newspaper articles divided up by decades, starting off in the 1820s and going from there, where he's sussed out all the articles in the prints back then. There's no commentary, nothing. He just presents the newspaper article as it was written. It's a wonderful resource. Highly entertaining. Good to flip through, find an article, just read it. Again, that's Monsters in Print by Adam Benedict. I found it on Amazon. I presume you can too. Thanks.